If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Kim Gordon there dancing on Michigan Avenue, which must mean something. It's Friday here in Chicago. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Coming up a little bit later on the program, Tom Gimbel will be in. He's the founder, CEO of LaSalle Network, comes by most Fridays. And it's springtime. You're cleaning your house, maybe. Tom's going to talk about spring cleaning your career. Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune in a little bit later to talk about what's going on in social media. But we start things off, as we do most Fridays, with Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Steve. Good to see you.
And you saw them dancing out there. Did you see them dancing?
I did. Everyone's out having a good time.
I like that. It's sunny out, not too bad. So, okay, Blue Sky Innovation talks about new things in tech in Chicago and all of that. And, you know, it's funny because you guys have a story about Twitter and tweets and how there's this new app, I think it's Aikido platform, that's raising money on Twitter. I'll have you explain it, but it just comes to the timing couldn't be better, because the example is Donald Trump, and here Trump and Ted Cruz are in this wife fight on Twitter. All of that. Explain for me Aikido.
Yeah, so Aikido is using the sort of idea of the martial art by the similar name, Aikido, which is using your opponent's force against him or her. So what they have done is set up a platform where organizations can have you sign up to donate money. You'll pick an amount that you ultimately want to donate, but then donations within that amount are triggered by activities that, let's say, annoy you or work against the cause that you support. So one example is MoveOn.org, which supports Bernie Sanders, is signed up on there. And you can donate money to MoveOn, but your donation is triggered by tweets by Donald Trump. So every time Donald Trump sends a tweet, you give, let's say, 10 cents to the cause opposing him.
Right. So you start up by saying, okay, I'm going to give $50.
Exactly. Right? You can set a ceiling on it, so you're not subject to any, you know, anything too crazy happening that will cause you to.
Trump gets into a Twitter war, you don't owe like $52,000 or something.
Exactly.
Like that. Okay, so that's the one, and they're just kicking this off, right? I think they started even this month.
They have three campaigns going right now, so it's definitely just getting off the ground.
And another one has to do with the NRA?
Yeah, so there's a group that's kind of Moms Against Guns kind of thing, so they're giving, you know, that money goes to anti-gun law lobbying, and that is triggered by tweets from the NRA.
Right. So if the NRA sends a tweet, the Moms Against Guns,
they get 10 cents or whatever
amount
you've agreed to give them. Exactly.
And the final one has to do, is probably the most local. It has to do with saving trees in Evanston.
Yes. So if you're annoyed by teardowns and, you know, beautiful old trees coming down, you can pledge to give, you know, a dollar, let's say, every time a tree is cut down in Evanston, and that will go toward efforts to plant new trees.
And the guy behind this is a guy named Dan Ratner, right? Is he?
No, so Dan actually runs a different company.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's quoted in the story because he's something of an expert on the sort of social good and
Chris O'Brien
money raising. But exactly, Chris O'Brien runs this particular company.
And is he the guy who's worried about it being, I mean, it's sort of a negative fundraiser?
Yeah, so Dan, who runs Public Good, was just weighing in on, like, the idea of, you know, you think of giving money and it's a positive thing and you want to support causes. So, you know, this Aikido sort of plays to the negative a little bit, which people might have interesting feelings about, like tying the idea of doing good and making a donation to a negative emotion. But, you know, the founder of Aikido feels like it's a good thing. You know,
so
it triggers interest.
It's fun anyway, right? Because it's a way to give money. It sounds like you're going to give anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just a different, of course, to do that, you have to sort of engage with the people you don't like.
Yeah. It creates, there's something of a revenge feeling about it, which, you know, unless you're really pure of soul, you might find is a little bit fun.
What do they see for the future of this?
So, yeah, I just think they would like to grow. They want to get more campaigns on there. And, you know, they're somewhat tied to progressive causes. So we'll see where that goes.
We got Bernie Sanders. Yeah, I think that they probably are. Aikido is what is the name of it. And one of the hurdles they're going to have to jump over, I think, is the idea that the money that goes through Aikido isn't tax deductible.
Right. Well, so far that's because the groups that have been on there are not nonprofits. So therefore it's just like you're donating money to like a political cause or a group that is not a 501c3, your donation would not be.
Oh, I see.
Would not be tax deductible.
I thought it was because it was going through them.
If they get tax deductible donors on the platform, then presumably that would be fine that way.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, let's put on our Spidey jackets now.
Yes.
Go down to UIC, and there's this guy, Victor Matsavici. How did I do with that?
I think
Matavici. And he's come up with, he's calling it the Spidey Sense jacket, which might be cause trouble a little bit down the road. But the idea is he's developed this jacket that people who are vision impaired can wear to know when they're about to run into something, right? Or when something's about to run into them.
Exactly. It's loaded with sensors. A reporter actually tried it out. And it's got, a dozen sensors basically around your body and your limbs, and allows you to know if something is getting near you. So you can see how if your vision was impaired, be it because you're actually blind yourself, or in a case like fighting a fire where you might be in a smoky environment and you can't see, he's imagining applications like that where you would be able to sense objects either as you come near them or they come near you.
So the sensors vibrate.
The sensors vibrate. And a reporter said it feels kind of like when your cell phone vibrates in your pocket. It's that kind of thing, but it can intensify as something gets closer. And she said wearing the sort of prototype, she could tell being blindfolded when someone near her was gesturing. Like, it was sensitive enough that she could feel their motions.
Wow.
As they got closer, as they moved up and down, that kind of thing.
And so if it's like someone's coming up on your right side, your right arm might twitch a little bit.
Precisely.
But if someone's really close, the whole jacket goes off.
Yeah, it just intensifies to the strength of the vibration.
I like the idea that it might be used with firefighters. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I was just telling her, I have a nearly blind pug, so I was like, I would maybe invest in a a little jacket version for a dog. So you could imagine different ways this could be useful.
Can I tell you, that's the way this kid's going to make money.
I know, right?
Because you could sell anything to pet owners.
I know.
Okay, so, well, let's go back to the firefighters. So they're in a smoky fire, and they come upon, well, it wouldn't help with an opening, like an open stairwell, but they come upon a column or something like that. Their jacket would begin to vibrate a little
bit. Yeah, it tells you, and the reporter walked through kind of a maze, which you could imagine it being like that if you're in a smoky building, right? It allows you to navigate through open space and know when you're banging into walls or things like that.
What do the blind organizations say? Is there a need here?
There is. They see a need for it, and a Chicago organization is working with them to help refine it. He's a graduate student. He's been working on this thing. He's planning now, as he graduates school, he's going to spend more time on it, and he really wants to perfect it and make it so it wouldn't necessarily have to be a jacket. It could be some kind of wearable. Maybe it would be a t-shirt or a scarf, or he's really working on refining what the product is.
And right now he's calling it Spider Sense, which again I know that you guys called Marvel to get a comment from the people at Spider-Man, and you didn't get one, but that's probably going to have to change.
I can't imagine that would be allowed to go on that way, but it does help you for the moment understand what it is.
Andrea Haynes is in the studio. She's the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. We're just talking about some of the stories they've been writing this week. And I want to wrap up with, this is all about a name. It's a music sharing app, and it started with the name Nuziki, and it has changed now to Noted, which I think is a big step forward. Tell me about Nuziki /Noted.
Yeah, so it does seem like the name is a good one, although we always worry about people's SEO, so we're worried that with Noted they might get a little bit lost with such a common name out there.
Okay.
But to them, they're like, it makes sense. It has to do with music. It's something that's going to stick with people and just be a little maybe more approachable, for users.
What is it?
So the product is sort of like, if you can picture an Instagram type of thing, but it's for music. So you can sign up on there. You can share with your friends. You can follow other users. And you just post music videos off of like YouTube or SoundCloud. So it's meant to be a way for you to share music with your friends, find new bands, find out what your friends are listening to, and just discover new artists.
And let's go back to Nuziki a little bit, because that came from a Swahili word.
It did.
Right. So it's kind of a cool, hip way to start, but it just wasn't sort of translating into what they needed.
Exactly.
And so I know there are algorithms involved here that they're going to predict what music I'm going to want to hear, or how is that going to work?
Exactly. So it's just like, many other things do. It's going to start noticing what you like, what you're engaging with, and make guesses for you about other things that you might like. So that sort of adds to that discovery factor of discovering new bands or new songs that you might enjoy.
So if they're going to make money doing this, they're not going to make it probably off of you and me using it, right? They're going to have to get the music industry involved.
Exactly. And they're hoping it can become a platform for promoting new music.
How do they do that? How would that work?
So I think, if they get a user base signed up that's engaged with it, and they get the algorithm kind of doing what they want it to do to really, if it's really driving great songs to you,
right,
you can see how that would be of use when, if you're releasing a song. Get it into the right hands.
Honest to God, when I was in seventh grade learning about algorithms and math, I never thought I'd be using the word as an adult. And here we are. Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Nice to see you.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
Have a wonderful weekend. It is 12. It's coming up on 12:18 now, a little bit later today. Oh, did I mention the guys from Ampi will be here? Now, Ampi is this battery. You know about it, right?
Yep.
And they were startup last year. I think they're going to come out with a 2.0. But the idea is you wear this, your kinetic energy helps to charge your payphone. Not your payphone, your iPhone.
Yes, exactly. Charge your smartphone using your own personal energy.
Well, 22, you're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's the Wind Trust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here on this Friday afternoon. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook as well, Steve Bertrand. Tom Gimbel is here, the founder, CEO of the LaSalle Network. I follow them on Twitter. Tom, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So I was just getting a little information from you on your brackets. So
the bracket would assume I'm still in play.
I don't think, is anybody still in play?
No one who had Duke and Michigan State, and I guess if you just went pure chalk and you had Kansas or North Carolina, right? The people that
I guess that's true because really there are some number ones
top two so. that are left. But I mean we're Midwestern people and we have all have Izzo crushes, so it is what it is.
Tom Crean, you have no Tom Crean crush.
No Tom Crean crush. So and I thought you were kind of a Marquette guy. I'm surprised you have a Tom Crean crush.
I don't. I should have looked this up. But, you know, there was the guy who was the assistant at Marquette. Trey was his name. And I know he's very ill. I don't know if he's...
I don't know.
But anyway, that sort of brought things back because Crean has been talking about that lately, his relationship with him. And I didn't get so mad at him when he left.
It's the business and people have to do it. The best thing about Crean is he's Harbaugh's brother-in-law.
Right.
The incestual relationship of coaches I find it very funny from a career standpoint.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine the stress level at those holiday dinners?
Oh, my God. The intensity level at those holidays.
I said the potatoes. All right, so it's springtime. We're talking about spring cleaning and all of that.
Yep.
And I know you are a great proponent of from time to time. I think one of the things I pick up from you is that you just need to take a step back sometimes and look things over, take stock. And this is probably a good time to do that.
Yeah, I think we're coming out of the hibernation, especially right where the listening audience is here. And we've hunkered down and it's coming out. The sun's out today. And you're thinking, you know, we can do anything in the world. Well, it starts with your career because if you can't pay for it, you can't do anything.
True.
And so you've got to look and say, is this the place where I want to come every day? Do I want to put in 40, 50 hours a week here? And if so, how do I re-engage? How do I build better relationships? Or are there really legitimate reasons that I want to move on? If it's just because you don't like your boss, then you have to ask yourself, why don't I like my boss? And really, am I doing things that would make my boss like me?
Well, that begs the question. When do you decide that a trouble area is fatal or one that can be overcome?
Well, I think it's like, truthfully, what people don't want to realize, a work relationship is like a friendship or a spouse, right? At what point do you just say, I don't want to be friends with this person who I've been friends with since kindergarten? Or do I want to get a divorce? Or do I want to break up? And it better be for some really good reasons.
That's a good point. So that if it is like a spouse or a long-term friendship, you know that there are going to be ups and downs, too.
Absolutely. And managers have different things going on in their life, and maybe they have familial issues that are making them act differently. So you've got to look in the mirror, and you've got to say, am I doing everything to make my manager's life easier? And what can I improve on?
One of the things you talk about, too, is that you should, in the spring cleaning time, make relationships, foster them, go to the happy hour.
Absolutely. It's cultivating, right? You're going to go out in the garden in a couple weeks, right? And we're going to put the peat moss down, and we're going to get the hoe, and we're going to turn over the dirt. It's the same thing in the office. Go to the happy hour, get on that softball league that's going to be coming out, and recultivate the relationships at work.
Yeah, you know, I'm bad at that. I just want to get home at the end of the day.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not easy,
but it's funny you say that because these are the things that are supposed to be the fun and the easy part. And in a way, you're saying it's almost a duty or responsibility to do it.
Well, I got to tell you, I got three kids. Getting to 1,800 basketball and hockey games over the weekend isn't easy either. Right? Nothing's easy, but you get out of it what you put into it. And to have that healthier work relationship, and you know, I think what people do in your business is so different because you're on the air for so many hours. But when you're in a corporate environment and you're in a cube with 20 other people, right?
Right.
You're with these people, searing them in the face all day long.
Right.
Right. Go out and have a drink with them after that. It makes life, or have a water. You don't have to drink alcohol.
The other thing change your attitude a little bit by just saying thank you a little bit more.
Absolutely. Be appreciative. And I'm no Boy Scout.
I'm definitely not a Boy Scout.
But manners go a long way. And when you show appreciation to your coworkers, you'll be surprised how it starts reciprocating.
Yeah, it's nice if they want you to be in the room.
It's nice when people actually invite you into the room.
Or to the happy hour, or to the softball team.
Yep.
Tom Gimbel, thanks for taking time to come by today.
No, absolutely, and happy holidays to you.
Same to you, and enjoy your, I know you're going to have a little family event at the basketball games tonight.
We're going to go see, hopefully, Iowa State can bring home a win.
Yeah, I know what you're going to do. You're going to be watching the scoreboard of the games in Philadelphia.
We did not get the best teams in Chicago.
It's Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. Follow them on Twitter as well. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. The Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, so one of the things, you know, you mentioned to me you wanted to talk about is Instagram.
Yep.
And their presence on the web.
Yep.
Getting better than it is on the app.
Catching up, anyway.
Catching up, okay. So I'm thinking, I don't even ever look at it on an app. I always look at it online. So
yeah.
What am I missing?
I think the thing is, you know, Instagram was always supposed to be a very mobile-centric thing. You were always supposed to...
Wait, did I say Snapchat?
No, you said
okay,
it right.
Okay, good. Okay.
You said it right. No.
I always screw them up.
You're supposed to take photos in the now, and then people complained, and they wanted the ability to upload photos. So now there's this back and forth between what's available on the website and what's available on the app. So the app has always been ahead. The website's always been behind. Website's playing catch up. And now you have a notifications tab on the website and everybody's really excited. And they added this little tiny heart at Instagram.com/ whatever your username is. And under that heart, it shows you everything that's happened on your photo. It's the same thing that you can see on the app. But when it happens on the browser, people get excited because there's this back and forth between what should be more powerful.
Between the app or the browser.
Between the app or the browser.
When you say it shows everything that's happened on your photo, you mean people who've looked at
yes,
it?
Yes, all of the activity. So whether it's a like or whether it's a comment or whether it's a whatever it is, it shows up there.
Yeah, I mistakenly said Snapchat earlier because I was having trouble with my Snapchat the other day.
Oh.
And I called 911.
You probably shouldn't do that.
And they didn't want to help me.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently weird. That's a thing though, but you probably shouldn't do that. Well, it's a story out of the United Kingdom where someone just like that was having a difficult time getting their Snapchat to work. Over there they dial 999 instead of 911 and called and told the operator very, very straightforwardly that he was having trouble with the Snapchat, to which the operator replied, "Do you really think that that's an emergency worth dialing emergency?" And he said, "Yes, my Snapchat's not working." And the operator said, "That is not considered an emergency."
Do your British accent. How did she do it in a British accent?
I do not do a very
Come
good British
on,
accent.
Let me hear just a little bit. Give me a little bit.
I do a terrible British accent.
That wasn't so bad.
Oh,
I mean, it was bad, but it wasn't so bad.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
Okay, so the guy was shot down.
Yes, yes. And he apologized. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry for that, but it just goes to show." I mean, I see stories all the time about how people call 911 for ridiculous things. The person who didn't get enough McNuggets and, you know, just the crazy things that happens like that. Apparently, Snapchat is very, very important to this person.
Can I tell you, for 20 years or so, I did news with Kathy and Judy. And
okay.
One of them, I'm filling in tomorrow with Kathy O'Malley. One of them, not Kathy O'Malley, we had quite a bit one time because she called 911 for, I think maybe her cable was out. So it can happen on either side of the pond.
I guess it can.
That was a long time ago. All right. So we can't do that. So that's one little mishap.
Right.
I want to talk about the Google Map mishap too, because I teased
another
that. But before we do that, an interesting thing about driverless cars.
Yep.
And there was a survey recently about driverless cars, and it sounds like the age group least enthused about them is the age group that you would think would be most open to technology and changes.
Yes, the younger people, late teens, early 20s, not high at all about driverless cars. And it is an interesting, like, back and forth as to why they think that is. You know, there's something to be said about your first freedom to be able to have your license and the ability to take the car out and drive it. And it makes total sense. But kids are, you know, it's a dangerous thing for young drivers, you know, where accidents are.
Sure.
You know,
I mean,
huge
Tribune
problem.
Reporting was very influential in changing state law.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's fascinating to me, especially that 72% of young drivers don't want driverless cars because driverless cars are what every single company is trying to get ahead of right now. They don't really say what age they're targeting, but you would think they have to be targeting the younger crowd who is very, you know, mobile and using apps. But these are the people that are not interested in it.
All right. So it was a Nielsen survey, as you said, 72% of American high schoolers said they don't like the idea of a driverless car.
Yeah.
okay, these are the people who are going to be buying driverless cars one day.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, just the fact that they're not interested in something like that. I mean, me, you know, in my 40s and a very big tech person, and I don't really know how I feel about it. I wouldn't mind at least, you know, being able to use an app and have my car come to me and me sit down and read the paper. And I mean, what they say sounds amazing.
Right.
I don't know that I want to do it forever, but I would think that if I was 20 years younger, that would be like the most exciting thing in the world.
Well, I have a camera now, a rear view camera, and I'm not willing to let go and completely trust that yet. So
sure.
I can't imagine trusting a car to drive for me.
Sure. And yeah, that's going to take a lot of trust. And maybe.
But again, we're the older guys.
Well, right, right. But maybe this is a situation where these younger people obviously have not had any exposure to it. They just know of the idea. Maybe when they see it, maybe they'll feel differently.
All right, let's talk Google Maps.
Okay.
And this is a story out of, where are we, in Florida? No, Texas.
Yep.
And there's a wrecking company.
Yep.
Got a, all right, you know, Fred, we got an order to go tear down a house.
Yep.
Look it up on Google Maps.
Yep.
Pull it up, check the picture. Well, it looks like the house.
Yep.
Down goes the house.
Yep.
Wrong house.
Wrong
Scott.
House. Wrong house. And you know what? You gotta somehow trust Google Maps, because if it's on Google Maps, it's gotta be right, right?
Oh, so they went to this house and they tore it down.
Yes, they tore it down. And it was apparently in a tornado ravaged neighborhood, and the people the house that came down, they were thinking about having it torn down, but they hadn't made the decision yet, and this just ended up being the wrong house.
And so, I'm interested in what comes next then.
Yeah,
so
I know. The next part is great.
You'd think there'd be this huge humility. You know, we are so sorry we tore down your house.
You would think so, yes.
But that's not quite what happened.
No, no. The person who owned the wrecking company, I think he was quoted as saying, it's really not a big deal. and the part that comes best that I think is even better, the city manager, he says, you know what? Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, just the...
Basically what the guy said was, you know, your house really should have been torn down anyway.
That's probably what he was saying, yes. But I also took from it that, you know, if it's on Google Maps, it's got to be right. If it's not, oh, well, can't blame us type of thing.
I see, right.
That's just crazy.
Well, because clearly their possessions would have been in that house too, probably, right?
Well, yeah, yeah.
All right, so don't trust Google Maps when you're driving to your family for Easter on Sunday. Or you can,
exactly.
You know, trust it, but don't trust it absolutely.
It's like the driverless car, you know. Give it a little bit of thought before you do it, you know.
You know, never completely surrender all your control,
right, exactly.
No matter what it's about.
Exactly.
I feel like we've had this come up from time to time. Google Chrome now is working on what they're calling it Reword.
Yep.
Which is going to make sure that our emails and are nice when we talk to each other.
Right. I'm not sure that they're working on it. It is an actual plugin that goes into Google Chrome.
Okay.
And basically, it's like an editor. So, I love the thought of this. It's like a spell checker or like a grammar checker, but it's a checker to say I'm being nice to someone. So, if you were going to write me a sternly worded mean email for some reason, and
couldn't possibly be one.
Well, thank you. But in this extension, it would light up red or underline or something and say, you know, this is something you don't want to say.
So if I were like if the word horses, whatever. When that comes up, it'd have a little red line through it.
Yes. It would say you probably would rather change it to something else. Now, the way I understand it, it will change it or give you suggestions to change it to something else, which I think is a very cool idea.
So I'm at my keyboard and I'm typing and it comes in horses.
Yep.
I get the red line. And does it give me alternatives?
It's supposed to give you alternatives. Now, in that case, I don't know whether you get rear end. I don't know what you get from that. I might change the entire sentence
right.
if that happened. You know,
so but I read that. I look at it. I'm like, yeah, that's really not the way I want to describe Scott. And
right.
I should find a nicer way.
Right.
Right.
Right. I think what is so cool about this is, you know, it's not something that you need, but if you think about every single time that you wish that you could take back something you send, because Google has an unsend button on email. I don't think anybody ever uses it, but it exists. You know, so for all the times that you send something and later you just think to yourself, why did I say that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There's an unsend button. It has like a time limit and you can bring it back, but I've never used it. I don't think anybody ever does. But this idea is just on a browser. But think of what you could do if this was on social media in general. Think if this was built into Twitter. Every single time someone tried to tweet something, every time Donald Trump tries to tweet something crazy, maybe this thing would say, hey, perhaps you would rather say it this way.
Which begs the question, do you think if Donald Trump is tweeting out about Ted Cruz's wife and a little red line comes through it, that he's going to be the kind of guy to change his mind?
No, he's probably going to declare the end of Little Red Lines when he becomes president, right, because that's not going to happen.
Or do you think he's the sort of guy who would ever, or not Trump, let's not,
sure,
but some, if you're some bully or some guy who writes meanly,
yep,
you're probably never going to be drawn to download this plugin anyway.
I think that may be true, but I really, really believe that there are some people out there who think to themselves, okay, if this thing thinks that I'm doing this the wrong way, I think there are people out there who really do feel remorse sometimes.
So this is aimed at the nice people who sometimes fly a little bit off the handle.
That's probably true, yes.
Scott Kleinberg, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Flip that switch and what do you get? You get a...
12:50, you're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, and we're going to talk electricity and get a little charge. Tejas Shastri is in the studio. He is the co-founder and CEO of Ampi. Tejas, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Did I get the company right? Is it Ampi?
Ampi, that's correct.
And it's getampi.com is the website,
getampi.com.
Right?
Getampi.com.
What the heck is Ampi? Tell me about it.
So the Ampi Move, which was our first consumer product, is a portable battery for smartphones that can charge from motions like running, cycling, and walking.
When we're moving around, we're creating energy.
Exactly, and we capture that energy and turn that kinetic energy into power for your smartphone.
Where did this idea come from?
So me and my co-founders, we were all PhD engineers at Northwestern, and we were in an entrepreneurship class there where we wanted to solve this problem that we all had, which is that our smartphones and our wearables and the increasing number of devices in our lives all have these issues with battery life. And we were active people, so we thought, why couldn't we take some of that energy from the activities we love throughout the day and use it to charge our phones?
So a better story would be you were at a frat house in college or something, and you came up, not PhD direct.
Yeah, but fortunately the PhD background allowed us
right.
to really take this.
Okay,
course.
And so how long did it take to come up with the technology?
So we came up with the actual idea in 2013, and 2014 was when we actually launched the company. We launched a product on Kickstarter, and that's where we got initial capital to build it. We started shipping last September, so the consumer device took about a year to build, and now we're working on taking the technology, scaling it down, and working with companies to incorporate it into smartwatches and fitness trackers and other wearable devices so that they charge themselves as you're wearing them.
So I'm interested in the idea that you guys are all engineers,
mm-hmm.
right? And because I'm always drawn to how someone becomes a business person, a business owner, you know, and there are people who go to business school,
right.
And there are people who dream about creating a business, and then there are inventors like such as yourself, and you find yourself a businessman. Mm-hmm. Is that the course you wanted to take? I mean, did you see yourself owning a company when you decided to study engineering? I would think maybe not.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I planned on when I first went to graduate school, but I'd actually, you know, come from a background where, you know, the companies I'd worked at previously were all smaller companies, so it was something that it was an environment I was used to. And, you know, the key for us was just, you know, finding the right investors, the right advisors, the right people to really help us learn in areas that we didn't have as much expertise
right.
in.
Have you found that you like the idea of running a business?
I do. I mean, I really enjoy mostly the idea of building a team and inspiring a culture within that team that, you know, really allows us to do things that we never thought we could do.
You know, when you start on your own, though, you're sort of not just – you're not only creating your own culture, you might not know how to create a culture. So
it's true.
How does a group of guys – with an idea grow into a cohesive business unit?
It's true. A lot of it comes from who you pick as co-founders. And I was lucky enough to have found two great co-founders at Northwestern. And really, the culture evolved out of the way we worked together. And, you know, from day one of starting the business, that's where the culture evolves. You know, finding the key people early on in the team. We always wanted to find people that would challenge us, would have expertise that we didn't have, and that we knew would be able to really push our ideas forward.
I want to get back to Ampi, but I'm drawn to this a little bit. So the three of you were friends.
So we knew each other, during our PhDs. You know, we were kind of in the same circles. Really, you know, after, coming together in the class, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie that developed
sure.
between us. And yeah, I mean, we're definitely close now.
Well, so the three of you, but then I'm interested in the fourth and the fifth and the mm-hmm. sixth people who come in sort of outside that inner circle, and you've got to foster the relationship the cohesion again with them?
Yeah, it's a great question, because for us, you know, we had a lot of different members, whether they were interning or things like that with the company, that have kind of come in and out. But the core team that we've built, you know, the fourth person was our director of design. And, you know, we didn't have any product design experience. We needed somebody with a design eye. And it was somebody that I had met through a mutual friend that, you know, we had conversations. They started working with us part-time, and then he ended up joining the company full-time. Our director of marketing, again, was a friend of Alex's that he took classes, improv comedy classes at Second City.
Really?
About. And, you know, he helped us a little bit with our Kickstarter campaign, just, you know, pro bono. And after that, we're like, hey, your expertise is fantastic.
It's interesting. Exactly, the road now to business success,
right?
There isn't one. There are 1,000. There are a million of them.
That's true.
You mentioned Kickstarter. Wildly successful on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You guys raised 3 times your goal of money, right?
That's true. Yes, we did.
And how did that help you, and how did that allow you to move forward quickly?
That really gave us validation of the desire to have motion charging. So, you know, outside of, you know, what we thought we knew, okay, there are other people that want this product, and that was good validation for us. That was good validation for investors, and allowed us to really, you know, show people that this could be
right.
Something. And so, you know, it gave us capital to start producing the product. But, you know, building a business, you know, requires more capital than that. So it was really a launching point for, you know, bringing on additional investors, bringing on advisors, and really, you know, anchoring people around this idea.
All right, I'm going to ask you the uncomfortable question.
Sure.
Because the Kickstarter clients, then when you shipped it out,
mm-hmm.
it didn't work well for everyone. And when
sure.
I say it didn't work well, the response wasn't altogether positive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working on that. There's a 2.0 coming out, and those things will be taken care of.
Exactly.
But that has to be a painful thing to go through and adapt to.
It definitely, you know, it's something where, you know, we're always constantly focused on
right.
customer feedback. You know, during our campaign itself, we actually, you know, when we first launched the product on Kickstarter, people said, I want a bigger battery, I want a better accessory kit. And we actually ended up delaying the release of our product for 3 months so that we could incorporate, you know, all the feedback we had gotten from customers to release the product. And, you know, by putting the product in people's hands, you know, we found out what's worked best, what's not worked best, because it's really a new product category.
It makes you better.
Exactly.
It can hurt a little bit, but it makes you better.
That's true.
Tejas Shastri, GetAmpy is the website, GetAmpy.com. I look forward to 2.0. I look forward to the next one. I'm sure we're all going to be wearing one in one form or another one day. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.